Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Alejandro Maineto, and I'm based out of Miami. I'm a senior partner with Overactive, and Overactive is a digital consulting firm. So, pleasure to be here.
Alejandro, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Before we dive into your current role, current organization, give us a thumbnail version of your career to date.
Great, awesome. So, I've been in the technology industry for a while. I've had three careers, basically. One career has been as a CIO and a CTO for different companies in different industries. Second one in consulting. So been in consulting for many years, advising different companies on digital strategies for the most part over the last 10 to 12 years. And then the last one is an entrepreneur. So I've started a couple of companies, sold off the first one, and working on a stealth one there. Currently just to see, what the appetite is for the market right now.
That's super exciting. I love how you categorized it into the three different areas, which I can relate to on many levels. Kind of a similar path. I started out in corporate world, in technology as well. And then, shifted to entrepreneurship, started multiple startups of my own, successfully failed. Most of them had one decent exit. And then now I'm really dabbing into the past couple of years as an angel investor and advisor to a lot of the tech startups. So that's super exciting. In terms of what you're currently working on, to the extent that you can share, tell us a little bit more about it. What problem you're trying to solve?
Sure. So currently I'm a senior partner with a digital consulting firm called Overactive. And basically what we do is we help companies in four areas. One is in innovation. So we help companies innovate in different and many ways. And we could talk about that a little bit later if you like. The second one is around crafting digital strategies for their businesses. And today the word digital is sort of it's an overused word. A lot of people use that word digital. Today what we do is we blend business, technology, design, engineering, and all of it, sort of we put it together and we help those companies with crafting what their vision is for the future. The next thing that we do is we help companies build products. And so we build products that are or services that are digital in nature. And then the last one is that we help companies adopt emerging technologies. So a lot of companies today are dabbling with new and exciting things. A lot of the things that are a lot of people have seen in movies and they think, stuff is not real yet, but a lot of companies are dabbling and experimenting with that stuff. So we help corporations, adopt those technologies into their organizations.
Well, that's super exciting. And you've mentioned that one area that you guys specialize in is innovation. And we, as in Ivy Podcast, we spend quite a bit of time talking about this particular topic to a lot of different guests, different domain areas. And from your standpoint, what are some of the strategies or practical recommendations that as you partner with your client companies or even internally at Overactive, what are some of the things that you guys are doing on a day-to-day basis that really help you build and foster that culture of innovation?
Yeah, so I think that, innovation is an interesting area because a lot of people don't give themselves enough credit around innovation. My key to innovation is around three areas. One is start small and go big. So this is where a lot of areas, especially in smaller companies, you don't have the budgets or the people to go ahead and do it. But there are ways that you can try to experimenting with something small until you prove the concept and then sort of go large and expand. And then you're able to justify the budgets and everything else. The second one, though, if you're a mid-size or a larger company, my recommendation is to create a budget And because nothing is taken for, you know, seriously until there's a budget associated to it within a corporation. Because now there's real dollars assigned to that. And so people are expecting sort of results. Otherwise, you know, and, you know, for especially for larger corporations, it sort of becomes that, the, you know, becomes a hobby or something that you can do in your spare time. However, you know, innovation is something that, you know, should be part of everybody's diet. You know, the last one I would say is one that a lot of people don't pay attention to, which is innovation needs a strategy. There's so many things that you can do around innovation, whether it is, you know, external, internal, stuff that is disrupting, stuff that is divergent, stuff that, you know, will get you sort of near-term results versus very, you know, market-changing disruption. And so you really need to craft a strategy around it, you know, in order to sort of identify what are your short-term goals, you know, what are your long-term goals, and how do you get from point A to point B?
That's very exciting, and thanks for compartmentalizing that in that way. And as you move that a little bit further from innovation standpoint, what are the different trends and ideas that really excite you these days? What are you researching? What are you looking to invest in further?
Yeah, if I had a nickel for every time I'm asked that question, I'd be a rich man. I tell you that there is so much stuff going on today, but my passion is around the convergence of all of these technologies, and in particular, too, the convergence of artificial intelligence and the Internet of Things are really stuff that, you know, is really the stuff that excites me the most, because I think that that stuff is going to be, you know, pervasive in our lives. It sort of is starting to be a little bit, you know, one or the other. When you think about Alexa, when you think about the things that you know, that you already take for granted, but even what your email does today, you know, there's a ton and millions of lines of artificial intelligence code running behind the scenes in order to, you know, to predict and help you sort of be smarter and work smarter. So the convergence of those two technologies, I think, is really the future. A thread of that is stuff that, you know, today you see sort of in its early beginnings of what you know, what is going to be virtual agents and robotics, and sort of, you know, those two things also converging. That stuff is really, you know, a passion of mine.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I can definitely relate to a lot of those with that period, especially we're in and coming out of pandemic. Those are definitely highlighted to the next level. So as we've seen kind of how companies operate last year and this year in terms of kind of future of work concept in general, with, you know, the gig worker contingent workforce emerging, what are your thoughts on that? So just the overall trend, and where do you see this going?
The future of work is something that spent many years on working, especially in both in the consulting area, but when I was at my last corporate role, I had to lead that effort, and a lot of it has not changed from the goals and objectives. However, what the pandemic has done is accelerated partially some of that stuff. You know, I think that the future of work is gonna really mean people not working in the traditional office environment anymore. And this is gonna be not just for the few and far in between that sort of could afford to do that, but it's really gonna mean that there's gonna be enough bandwidth, enough capabilities, and enough intelligence going around, whether it's in your car or in your home or, you know, or a public place, and all of that stuff converging and allowing you to really have no boundaries anymore from where you can work and do things. And people are not going to be, you know, I think in the pandemic they learned, and it was a great training exercise for people to become less sensitized around the fact that you don't need to show up every morning at 9 o'clock in the morning into some, you know, traditional office in order to be productive. And so that's just going to get exacerbated over the next few years. I think the concepts of smart cities are going to help in that effort, and are going to also accelerate in that. One of the key things that I think everybody thinks about when they're thinking about the future of work is around automation, and the pros and cons around what automation is going to really do. You know, some people may, you know, are afraid that they may lose their jobs. you know, some others are going to be very excited around the prospects of, you know, not having to do any more tedious jobs and then sort of getting lifted up and upskilled to do much more sort of value added stuff. And so I think that automation is also going to be a key part on how we do our day-to-day jobs. One piece of advice I would leave your audience with is that if today you or someone that you know are in a job that is repeatable and automatable, I would say, you know, get trained. You know, there's an opportunity still to sort of learn so many new things and sort of to get, you know, your skills upgraded in order to sort of not be replaced, you know, potentially by an automation process or a machine, you know, coming to a theater near you soon, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that recommendation. I actually wrote quite a few pieces on that, in particular, the whole indispensability factor, where, you know, are you being replaced by the next trend or by whatever the, you know, the environment that we're in, and just being able to try to stay ahead of the curve a little bit from that perspective and really invest in yourself from that standpoint. I think that's invaluable advice there. So as you collaborate and work with a lot of the organizations of different size, talents acquisition, it's a huge factor. And for every executive, as you know, whether you're actively recruiting or not, it's at the top of your mind 24/7. Surrounding yourself with the best folks, with the best like-minded, you know, professionals out there. What are your thoughts on that? How to overcome the current candidate-driven market, which is, you know, the war for talent is real out there. So what are some of the things that really help you stay ahead of the curve from that perspective?
Well, you touch on a topic that is near and dear to my heart because I live this every day. So when you think about people being an asset or your asset, it doesn't get any more clear and concise around that topic when it comes to consulting, right? Because in consulting, and especially in technology consulting, not only people are your asset, but you live and die by the good people and or great people that you build around those high performing teams in order to sort of deliver, you know, great value to your clients. There is an absolute war for talent today, not only in attraction, but also in retention. And I think that the formula is, it's really the same for both, because I think one is about executing on certain things well in order to sort of retain those people. But also if you execute on those things well, you end up attracting a lot of great people. And there's a few things that I've thought about as I do my job, because part of my responsibility today is not only sales, but it's also delivery. And I run a business unit today within the corporation. And part of our job is to do exactly that. And, you know, we hire hundreds of people every month. It's a challenge. But I think it goes back to a few things. The first one is really about leadership and ensuring that our team and the team that manages those individuals and those people really are clear around how to be a leader, right? And go beyond being just a manager in order to sort of inspire, challenge the team and you know, and take them to sort of new heights. The second thing is around fostering a great culture. And that only exists if your CEO and the rest of the C-level team sort of live it day by day, because it filtrates, it cascades around the rest of the organization. And people today, you know, they're very savvy, right? And they will, it doesn't matter who you are, you could be at the lowest ranking member of the organization, but you see it, it is palpable. There is no more lip service around, you know, how, you know, whether your culture is alive within the corporation or not. And you need to sort of foster that and make sure that it continues growing. And the architect behind that is the CEO of the company, right? The other thing that happens is also then you need to think about total rewards for your employees. And it's no longer the days of just being sort of one component of, you know, just going to give you a great base salary or a great bonus or stock options and all that. But people now, and the pandemic has been very clear about this, right, that people care more about other things as well than just the sort of the economical and financial piece of you know, what they're worth. So if you could be really thinking about a total rewards component and around the benefits that you're providing your employee, I think that you're going to be better off than those that are just focusing on, you know, base bonus and some long-term incentive component. The last one is probably one of the most important ones, which is the flexibility from as an employer. Today, and especially from a generational standpoint, the more sort of the more newer generations that we're getting, the more flexibility that everybody demands from their employees. Because as long as they are able to be productive and do their job, it really shouldn't matter how they go about doing their job. It really shouldn't matter where they're doing their job from. It really shouldn't matter whether, you know, they show up at 9 o'clock or they work at night. You know, as long as they're producing results, you know, a lot of companies should be able to, you know, to have that. There is this concept today that a lot of companies talk about, but few of them live it, which is the concept of diversity and inclusion. And I think that the more and more that companies sort of start living by those, living and respecting those things, I think that the more that they're going to be able to really retain, you know, the current workforce. But it's really a package, right? So it's not like you do one thing and then you don't do the next thing. So if you're able to do all of those five or six things and you're able to deliver as an employer, then I am very confident that you could not only retain the best talent, but also you could attract the best talent as well.
Right, absolutely. No, I love these strategies, and you touched upon a very important topic, especially, you know, as we talk about war for talent, war on retention, because a lot of companies, as you've mentioned, you know, shifting to fully remote environments, they thought, oh, great, I'm going to get access to all this great talent, you know, on global scale. But at the same time, the competition 10x as well, because companies right. Much bigger, much better packages targeting the same candidates. So that's a very unique perspective. It's going to be interesting how things play out in the next period. From recommendation and advice perspective, and where I'm going with this is, you've been in technology wearing different hats for quite some time now, and a good portion of our listeners are early stage career professionals, second year MBAs, those are entering workforce, they're on that cusp deciding whether to go, you know, the corporate route or start their own companies, and quite a few of them, you know, technologists as well. What would be your recommendation to a 21-year-old Alejandro today, where, based on what you know now in terms of what type of skills to invest in early, what type of direction to take, just overall your thoughts on that?
Great question. I love it because I wish somebody would have told me that when I was starting my career. It would have saved me so many years of sort of struggle, and then I would have kept all my hair. the first one, and I can't stress this enough, is network, network, and network, right? Really wire yourself, even if you're on the introverted side, even if you're not on that scale of sort of being outgoing enough, but really, really learn how to network, develop your network, and then nurture your network, right? So that is the most important thing that I could recommend anyone. The second thing, it's around your public communication skills and your sort of business and written skills. You know, in any school, doesn't matter what school, they do, I would say at best, a mediocre job in preparing students for the real workforce. And in particular in engineering schools, I don't think they do a great job at all in really preparing students to be able to communicate, sell, and publicly, you know, present and defend an idea or a concept or a solution. And I think that in general, don't wait for your engineering school or your business school or whatever to help you do that. Invest in that on your own in order to sort of, you know, be able to do that. You know, there's a saying that goes that you're always selling. Doesn't matter what age or what you're doing. And it's absolutely true. You know, and you're always selling. And in order to be good at doing that, you need to invest in some of those skills.
Those are great recommendations. Just to add a little more color to your first recommendation around networking, it's a friend of mine recently said, it's not, and let me see if I can put that correctly. It's not about what you know, and it's not about who you know, it's about who knows what you know. So I thought that was pretty interesting way to put this, which is very, very powerful. A lot of hidden messages there. So definitely much appreciated from that standpoint. In terms of your content diet, what are your sources for information? What do you consume on a daily basis for learning?
Yeah, so I try to divide, and even though they're very intertwined, but I try to divide my diet consumption of content into what is related to my job versus personal. And so while the sources may be similar, but on the job, one of the things that I do a lot is I love to mentor a lot of people. And so I learn a lot from other people, whether they're my other colleagues or people that I'm mentoring, or obviously, you know, the folks that I'm working with and for. So I'm a sponge when it comes to that. And I do it deliberately. I listen a lot. A lot of people, you know, whether you come from, depending on the culture that you're from, talking a lot may be a good thing. For some of the cultures, listening a lot may be a good thing, right? So you try to strive a sort of a good balance between those two. But I tend to learn a lot and I listen well. So that for me is definitely a source of content. The other one is obviously, you know, I read a lot, whether they're books or the internet, or, you know, I used to attend a lot of conferences over the last year and a half. It's been hard to do that, but I've been trying to do some virtual stuff as well. But I love reading. You know, I developed an early passion for reading when I was young, and I never gave that up.
So you couldn't have set me up for the last question I always ask is, what are you currently reading in terms of the book, and what book do you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Yeah, let me start with that one, especially if you have a younger audience. There's a great book called What Color Is Your Parachute? And I always love to recommend that book to folks, because when you're going to school, or when you're sort of, you know, getting started, you're not really sure what you want to do in life. And you know what? That's okay. Yeah, you don't need to sort of discover that when you're in your 20s. You could wait, and you could wait a long time, frankly. And What Color Is Your Parachute helps you sort of understand a little bit better what your vocation may be, or, you know, what are you sort of your tendencies from what you want to do in life. And 90% of the time is pretty darn on right. So that's a great book. Two things that I'm reading right now. One is called Tax-Free Wealth. And it's a great book, because a lot of us, you know, whether you're, you know, working for someone, or whether you're an entrepreneur, or whether you're on your own, you don't really understand all the intricacies and that are related to, you know, how much stuff you're giving back to the government, right? And there's so many ways that you could sort of become richer and wealthier over time if you really understand how to deal with the situation and the topic of taxes. So that's an interesting thing. The second thing that I'm reading is called Never Split the Difference. And Never Split the Difference is about sort of, you know, really negotiating, you know, if your life dependent on it, right? And it's really about the art of negotiating, and it's about the story of this FBI agent, and, you know, great book and you know, overall. So
oh, those are great recommendations. And for our listeners, we'll make those titles available in the episode notes. Alejandro, can thank you enough for your time today. Very short, insightful conversation. Personally learned quite a bit through this. Definitely going to stay in touch with you, and much appreciated for today.
Dan, it was a pleasure. Great day.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.